Hi, welcome to a Stanlib podcast. My name is Kevin Lings. I'm the chief economist within Stanlib. Today I'm joined by Amit Palmo, who is the investment specialist within JP Morgan Asset Management. And we're going to be talking about global equities with a focus on the Stanlib Global Select Fund. Amit, I think what we need to discuss in this podcast is the performance of the Global Select Fund. In previous podcasts, we've talked around some of the investment process, how stocks make their way into the portfolio, what's your view on equity markets and some of the opportunities and some of the concerns around valuations. But I guess it's useful to, from time to time, unpack how well a fund has done. And from my perspective, this fund has done exceptionally well over an extended period of time. That outperformance has continued on into the first quarter of this year. And so it's well placed in terms of the duration of the fund's existence to kind of unpack where some of this outperformance has come from. So can we start with maybe a discussion around exactly what the outperformance looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, Kevin, it's great to be discussing Global Select here with you today. So, for a portfolio like Global Select, we really pride it on being a core style agnostic offering for client portfolios. And so, regardless of the market environment, we want to see outperformance being delivered purely from a bottom-up stock selection basis. And that's really where we feel we have our edge. And very pleasingly, on a year-to-date basis, and certainly since inception, the longer-term track record of the strategy, stock selection has been the key driving factor behind that. And where we've seen that coming through most prominently have been in those sectors where we've leaned into much more. And those have been the more growth-oriented sectors, at least on a year-to-date basis, after the first quarter of 2024. Semiconductor names, media names being the principal culprits behind that outperformance on a year-to-date basis.
So Amit, I can understand where some of the outperformance comes from, but can you give us some sense of the magnitude of the outperformance? What sort of returns has the fund generated, say, over the last quarter and perhaps over the last 3 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So very pleasingly so, we've seen, as what we like to see, stock selection really dictating those returns. And of course, with that analyst base of more than 80 analysts located around the world, we rely on the valuation signal and the valuation inputs that they're providing. And on a year-to-date basis, that excess return is about 200 basis points just over, whilst on a 3-year basis, it's just over 250 basis points. Of course, that's referring to the longer-term strategy, which the Stanlib's Global Select Equity Strategy is based on. And very pleasingly so, the source of excess return being primarily driven by stock selection, which is what we want to see. So not being driven by massive overweights and underweights at the sector level or asset allocation calls, it's relying on those analyst inputs overall.
So, Amit, if we look at the under and over performance, is it a question of if a stock is underperforming for a period of time, do you tend to, on the whole, persist with that investment? Or is there quite a disciplined and rigorous selling process? So let's paint a scenario. You've gone through your investment process, you've selected a stock, it's gone into the portfolio, you've got a high level of conviction about that, and now it's underperforming. How long do you allow that underperformance to continue before you cut the position?
It's a really great question. And an example I would cite to you is what we did with Texas Instruments from 2016 going into 2021. And Texas, of course, a great quality franchise. It was a very compelling valuation point. They're a key player in terms of global semiconductor manufacturing and, of course, particularly within autos and industrial segments. We initiated that position before that exuberance around really electric vehicles came to the fore. And the applications and the widespread applications across many of those industrial uses. So we entered that position when it was what we consider to be very, very compelling, quintile one on our valuation metrics. And as that stock appreciated, and with the analyst insights that we got from one of our most senior researchers, his name is Rob Bowman, 3 decades in the industry, Rob would inform us over the course of that outperformance relative to broader markets that, okay, Texas has continued to deliver very strongly. He would adjust his numbers accordingly. And on a quarter-by-quarter basis, on a year-over-year basis, between 2016 to 2021, incrementally, the strategy would take profits on that name overall. And it would reallocate those profits elsewhere in the portfolio where we believe there were more compelling valuation opportunities. And this dynamic continues all the time. Much of the turnover, Kevin, is driven by this incremental adding and subtracting to names as that valuation becomes at a more premium level and adding to those names where we feel it's much more compelling overall otherwise, until we arrive at a point where we feel as though that name has become more expensive and we've exited out of that position entirely. So that dynamic is taking place all the time. It's not a case of initiating a position on the 1st of January and just sitting on it at the 31st of December. It's adding and taking those profits over the course of the year.
Is it possible to give us a sense of, on average, how long does a particular name stay in the portfolio, or is it quite varied?
It can vary, but I would guide towards a typical turnover level in terms of new names. So turnover overall tends to be about 70 to 80%, sometimes slightly higher than that. But new name turnover is only about a third of that. So let's say about 30%, which guides towards a typical holding period of about 3 to 3.5 years. Now, we're utilizing a valuation framework built around 5-year returns overall. In 5 years, it is really that magic number. Our investment process is built on. So a 3-year holding period kind of slots into that, with some names being more tactical and they might come out of the portfolio a bit earlier if the thesis overall isn't realized. But that's typically the holding period that we're guiding to. We like to hold them over a long-term time period, of course, but we will be adding and subtracting that name as that valuation fluctuates over a period of time.
And then just lastly, can you give us some sense of what is the feedback process? So by that I mean you're going through a process of selecting from a huge universe. Those stocks are making their way into the portfolio. Some are outperforming, some are not. Is there a regular feedback from those, from the performance of the fund, to say we need to adjust our selection process and that we need to refine it? Not completely revamp it, maybe tweak it in order to ensure that we get better outcomes. Is there a process like that, or is it a question of, no, we've got our the way in which we approach this, we're comfortable with that, there's a repeatability about it, and we simply implement that repeatability?
I think it's the advantage of that repeatability element that I would bring forth. Obviously, having that one common investment language amongst all of these 80 analysts is incredibly powerful. But to your question, the feedback process is also absolutely key in terms of learning lessons from where we may not have realized the thesis, or if we've realized the thesis for the wrong reasons. And the portfolio managers, the broader investment team, the research analysts overall, there's a constant dialogue amongst themselves in terms of what's driving those returns. A good analyst, even if they get a call on a stock right, but it's for the wrong reason, it's for something which they haven't forecast themselves, should have enough humility to come forward and say, this wasn't the core thesis behind it, but we've happened to benefit from it. I'm going to do further work on this, for example. And likewise, the portfolio managers, if there's an unintended view being expressed in the portfolio, from a risk management and from a very holistic portfolio construction perspective, they will be having that conversation amongst themselves on a day-to-day basis. And the technology platform we've developed at JP Morgan allows for portfolio managers to have that snapshot and break down their data on a day-by-day basis and look at it and what are those drivers of risk? What are we missing in the portfolio? What could possibly go wrong every single day? So no one's sitting on their laurels. They're still having that conversation, which is principally not what's gone right, but what could go wrong. And that's what really drives that investment conversation and discussion.
Brilliant. Thanks, Amit. Thanks for your insights and congratulations on the outperformance. It's, I must say, truly impressive. And from our perspective, we certainly hope it continues. But thanks for the time.